is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome into this Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings alongside Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonatoni with you. We're coast to coast as always. Michael out there at his office in Jersey. I'm live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Got a jam-packed 2 hours on tap. Plenty of NFL mandatory minicamp news coming out. Burning questions for each of their respective teams throughout the course of the week that we will get through. A great guest list on tap today as well. Coming up in a half an hour, VSIN's own Will Hill will join us. We'll get some picks from him in the NBA Finals and beyond. Thomas Gable, sportsbook director at the Borgata in Atlantic City at the end of the hour and in hour two. Claudia Bellafato joins us again. We've been cashing some tickets with her joining the program in the NBA and Stanley Cup Final. She's got some picks and props coming up for game three in that set. But Michael, the big question I feel like this time of year with mandatory minicamp is who's in, who's out, who cares? I know not our GM on the program. can you tell people at home, I guess, why it's important or not that players are that are dealing with contract negotiations are available at the facility or not?
Well, I mean, I think it's a little bit ridiculous that teams actually think that, I mean, fans think that because CeeDee Lamb didn't attend the Cowboys, that Jerry Jones is going to lose sleep on his yacht as he sails through the Mediterranean this summer. I doubt it, right? And, you know, just because other guys don't show up, I don't think it's going to bother any team at all. I'm sure Kyle Shanahan's enjoying his Spanish vacation overseas with his wife, that he's not worried about Brandon Ayuk not being there. Look, it's old school in a bad way. There's some good old school. There's a lot of old school that is bad. In the old days, holdouts had long implications. There weren't the fines. Mm-hmm. The league set up a collective bargaining system that holdouts really are not relevant. Hold-ins have become relevant, not holdouts. So we'll see. So look, it's early. No team has won anything in the month of May or June. Nothing. I've never seen a trophy being handed out at this time of the year. It's remarkable, you know, but yet we need a lot to write about. We have to talk about something. And so we're going to talk about who's not there. What we should be focusing on is how are these teams, instead of talking about how CeeDee Lamb's going to play, is what's the configuration of the Cowboys' offensive line and is it going to be good enough? What's Mike Zimmer's contribution to the defense going to look like as he comes back to be a coordinator after being a head coach for so long? Those are the fundamental questions that really we as a betting company, a betting network, and betting fans should really focus in on, because whether Lamb's there or not, it doesn't matter until week one when they get ready to start the season.
Yeah, I feel like with all of these teams that we're going to talk about here in a moment with their players who are or not showing up, there are so many other questions surrounding the team that are important this time of year, especially when we're trying to make our wagers. But let's go through, because it is newsworthy and noteworthy for the day, to take attendance here a little bit. I feel like when you're a little kid in school and like, will Jamar Chase, if you're here, please raise your hand, say present. And he apparently is out there in Cincinnati, by the way, despite pushing for a contract extension of his own. And while Chase is in the house as expected, franchise tagged fellow wide receiver T. Higgins is not. Chase still has 2 years left on his rookie contract. He's set to make $1.055 million in base salary in 2024 and $21.8 million on the fifth year option in 2025.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's got nowhere. It's like Parsons showed up too, right? I mean, where's Micah going to go? Micah's tremendous. We'll talk about him later. His ability to rush the passer, pressure the quarterback. We'll see what Mike Zimmer does with him in terms of moving him from the A-gap out to the C-gap, back behind the line, all those things. But I think more than anything is, you know, when you have that option to be picked up on, that's a contract. So you're going to have to come in. Look, the one thing I do know about Mike Brown, Katie Brackburn Brown, they understand quality. The Bengals will pay a lot of money, as they did with Joe Burrow, for somebody they think is great. And I don't think they're going to argue that Chase isn't in that should be in the top three paid receivers in the league. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to argue that. I think they're going to relish paying that. And after all their blown draft picks over the career, you want to do that. I mean, as an executive, when you hit a three-run homer on a guy early in the draft, especially at wide receiver, you want to do that. Now, the issue comes into, and I think this is where I'm going to write about this tomorrow for VSiN, is it's wonderful that the cap's going up. It really is. But as the cap has gone up And I've been motivated by your boy Tua. He's your boy now.
Oh, okay.
Your boy Tua saying the market is the market, right? And the market is the market, but how does that affect the overall structure of your team? Can I tell you the top five teams in terms of quarterback expenditures this year? And you tell me, and you're going to laugh when I go through this. Okay. Number one is Cleveland. Number two is Dallas. Number three, this is the shocker, the New York Football Giants. Number four is the Rams, and he wants a raise. And number five is the mayor of Munchkin Land, and he's probably wants a raise too. Can you imagine that? Those are the top five quarterback salaries in terms of cash. And the difference between the mayor and Mahomes in terms of their cap number this year is $10 million. And my point here is you can pay Chase, you can pay Parsons, but if you're paying Prescott all the money, how do you pay everybody else? You have to make choices. I don't care how much the cap goes up. And so the last time a quarterback has controlled this much of the cap, you have to go back to Steve Young when we were in an uncapped year.
Well, I look.
It doesn't work. And go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was just saying I look forward to reading the article when that comes out tomorrow. And for any of our new listeners, just to jump in here real quickly, if you didn't know who the mayor of Munchkin Land is, it's Kyler Murray. So Daniel Jones and Kyler Murray in that top five.
I'm sorry.
There. No, you're good.
Thank you.
At least
you remembered what his name was.
I wanted to follow up on just one quick question because we do need to move on more players here. But considering Chase's prop numbers, 1,300.5 receiving yards, 8.5 receiving touchdowns are his number. Do you think this could be a good opportunity to buy in on some of his overs? Because last year, yes, his numbers took a dip, but didn't have Joe Burrow for a bulk of the season.
Yeah, no, I do. I think Chase is a legitimate guy who tilts the field. And I think he draws coverage. And I think that if Burrow's there, he's got to have a good year. Look, the one thing you know if you're putting – if you're betting on any of these receivers for the Bengals, you're betting on Higgins or Chase, is they're going to be in 11 personnel. They're going to be in three receivers, and the ball's coming out. And Burrow will get them the football. And so that's going to be critical. And so, you know, and as they go through this, the reason they don't want to – it's not that they don't like Higgins. The reason they don't want to extend Higgins beyond this year is the same thing. They know what they're paying Burrow. And the money they're going to have to give to Chase, they can't afford to give it out to another receiver.
The numbers for Chase, by the way, he soared over them his rookie season with 1,455 yards and 13 touchdowns. Year two was on pace too, but only got 12 games under his belt. So keep that in mind. Another important team that we need to talk about because it is a day ending in Y, which means we have the New York Jets to discuss here. Hassan Reddick is not at Jets minicamp, which I think that was largely expected given his contract situation. Aaron Rodgers also absent though, which Robert Saleh did call an unexcused absence. He is missing for an event that was, quote, very important to him. Don't know any further details on that, but Saleh was asked by a reporter about the Hassan Reddick contract situation. Take a listen.
Hassan's not here because of his contract, I assume?
I don't know that. That's really for him and his agent to talk about.
He indicated when he was in Philadelphia that he wanted a new contract. I think that's what led to Philadelphia trading him. At the time of the trade, did he tell you guys he wanted a new deal here?
You know that, hate to put it on him, but that's
Joe.
That's a conversation that he would have had with Joe.
But Joe didn't get to you, Robert, right?
Not that I'm aware of, no. But he's been in multiple places and played at a high level at multiple places. He's a pro seasoned vet, and he's the last guy I'm worried about.
With Reddick, he did say that they did speak, by the way. So important to note, after last week saying they did not, he said they spoke this past weekend. Reddick is in a good place mentally, but he's choosing to sit this one out. Okay, you're laughing. Go ahead, Michael. Take over.
I would love to play poker with Saleh because he's got no poker face at all. Like zero. Like you could just know he's got no cards. He's got no hand, you know. And you talk to Joe Douglas if you like. I mean, look, he could say what he wants about Reddick. Philly got rid of Reddick for a reason. There's a reason Reddick's not on the Eagles, and it has a lot to do with his lack of play and his indulgence into wanting just to go up the field. And so, you know, they're going to have to fix that. Look, the Jets are a good team. Let's not kid ourselves. The Ifers have a lot of players if they stay healthy. But, you know, Rodgers, excused absence, get that. We don't know. I don't think there's anybody has a clue about Mike Williams, if he's going to be able to come back to even being close to player he once was. We don't know about this offensive line. So as we focus on Riddick, I will say this. I think Jet fans would agree. Their two best rushers last year were Franklin Myers, who's in Denver, and Huff, who's now in Philadelphia. And so even though that was the strength of their team, can that come back this year? We'll see.
Yeah, and clearly without Huff, you're going to need this piece there. Win total for the New York Jets set at 9.5, and despite having the longest active playoff drought in major professional sports, minus 160 to make the playoffs for the Jets this year. A surprise miss at mandatory minicamp was Amari Cooper. I feel like that's a name that we weren't hearing much about. Word last week in Tampa was that left tackle Tristan Wirfs would report to mandatory minicamp after skipping out on OTAs. He is there, and Jerod Mayo said yesterday the Patriots had full attendance, and that did include outside linebacker Matthew Judon, who's entering the final year of his contract and coming off major injury. I loved all the quotes from Judon, by the way, just saying, "I ain't giving no money away." And he told a radio station in Boston recently that after last year and going through the process that he did with his contract that ultimately resulted in just a little tweak and he missed so much time, he said, "I'm not worried about holding out, sitting out, or protesting because last year, quote, that stuff was trash. I'm not like that. I'm a football player."
Yeah, I mean, he's right. I mean, he's got to go out there and play. The problem is poor Matthew. They got to get the lead so he can rush the passer and use his skill set. Let's go back to Amari Cooper for a second. He's in the last year of a deal that pays him $20 million. He sees his receiver market where it is. Now, you know, the problem is he knows he's 30 years old. And I'm sure he doesn't want to go into the season and have to count on having production to get a new deal. We'll talk about it when he comes back.
Yeah, we're just getting started. More on that in a moment.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The U.S. Open tees off from Pinehurst in North Carolina tomorrow morning, and it's not too late to still get in your bets for the event. You can get an in-depth betting preview of the U.S. Open with VSiN's golf betting experts on the Long Shots podcast today. Our crew, Wes Reynolds, Matt Brown, and Kelly Bidlin, break down every aspect of this year's toughest major, including, of course, their best bets. Subscribe to Long Shots wherever you get your podcasts.
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise.
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
All right, Michael, we've seen a lot of headlines coming out of these mandatory minicamp days and podium sessions with coaches and players. But what's actually news and what's just noise? We're going to start in Cleveland, where Deshaun Watson saw an increased workload on the first day of minicamp yesterday, throwing during 7-on-7 drills for the first time this spring. Watson said, quote, he's very comfortable with this spot in his recovery process from season-ending shoulder injury. Comfortable, Michael. News or noise for Deshaun Watson?
Well, I think it is news because, you know, if he wasn't throwing in front of the media, there would be some speculation that something's wrong. I mean, you know, look, we are in June, early June. The players who had a lot of off-season surgeries probably aren't participating. But let's face it, Daniel Jones, who we'll talk about a little bit later this segment, you know, he's not out there throwing, and therefore you worry about whether he's going to be healthy. Maybe it's preventative. I don't know. But Watson throwing in front of the team and in front of the training, in front of the media, is a good sign. I think it is news.
Yeah, a lot invested in Deshaun Watson. And with that financial commitment comes expectations that he largely hasn't lived up to yet will be important. The Browns had 11 wins and a playoff berth last year, despite rolling through five different quarterbacks. Their win total this year set at 8.5. Okay, the always friendly New York market media is blasting your boy Aaron Rodgers today after skipping mandatory minicamp with what head coach Robert Saleh told reporters yesterday was an inexcused absence. Throw this up there. The front page of the New York Daily News sports section reads, call him Aaron Dodgers. The New York Post went with the headline full of hot air. News or noise?
Oh, this is definitely news. And what makes this so much news is there's no way Aaron Rodgers can be happy with basically being thrown under the bus by his head coach. I mean, let's be clear. This could be easily avoidable. Like, who's handling PR? Frank Luntz, where are you? The political PR machine. Get in there. Like, why do we have to call this inexcused absence? unexcused absence. Why can't we just say, hey, Aaron had a personal matter. We fully support him. He had to take care of it. End of story. There's nothing to it. They sent him down the river. And of course, Douglas, the general manager, he's running for the hills. He can't. He won't talk to anybody about Hassan Riddick or about Aaron Rodgers. I mean, you talk about dysfunction. And do you actually think this isn't going to carry over onto the field? Look, here's what we do know about Rodgers. Rodgers was very concerned when he was in Green Bay because he didn't feel that LaFleur held the team accountable, right? He doesn't want to be the head coach. He wants somebody to be the head coach. And obviously, Sala doesn't want to be the head coach. All he wants to do is be the rat in the building. Oh, well, Aaron didn't come to practice. I don't know what happened. I'm up. Tell mommy. Like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding? I mean, you're getting paid $8 million, $7 million a year. And you're throwing your hands up in the air? I just marvel at, like, who's advising this group of people in that building?
Michael, this is another instance where Robert Saleh drops the ball at the podium when he has a golden opportunity to make this a non-issue. The fact that he says this is inexcused and that Rodgers is subject to fines is the only reason that we're talking about this. Because if he would have just said, you know, yes, it's mandatory minicamp. He had something that unfortunately was very important to him, but it's excused. He's been putting all of the time in during the voluntary offseason workouts. We know how invested he is in this team. This would have been squashed. This would have been nothing. Robert Saleh made this something, which is why we're talking about it and why I do think that it could be impactful. Okay, we'll move on. You mentioned it already, Daniel Jones. Well, Giants head coach Brian Daboll said Jones is right where he needs to be as he continues to recover from the torn ACL that ended his season last year. Is it news or noise to learn that Jones is not participating in any of these drills at minicamp?
I think it's news, right? I mean, I reported back when they brought Russell Wilson in. Of course, they weren't interested in a quarterback. They weren't interested in Drake May, even though after he got picked, they didn't try to trade up. Look, this Giant team, thank God for the Jets, because if people would look at this Giant team and how they practice, I mean, what they do. Look, here's the concern you have about Daniel Jones. Coming off an injury, what makes Daniel Jones the most effective he can be is when he runs around, when he runs with the ball. If he doesn't run, He's not a drop back in the pocket quarterback. I think this is news. And let me say this, if he can't move at all or he doesn't run well early in the season, oh boy, watch out. You know, look, I told somebody yesterday, can you imagine they're only a half a point favorite against Carolina over in Germany?
Yeah.
I mean, that to me is startling. Startling.
And Lord knows he needs a bounce back, Michael. 1-5 as a starter last year, 2 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. He was sacked 30 times and suffered a neck injury in addition to the ACL that ended his 2023 season.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I mean, Stormy, I was working on this column that I got derailed because I had some issues come up. But the one thing that's amazing about Daniel Jones is, and I worked on this and I wanted to read it to you today on the air, is Jones is 6-21 against teams that went on to make the playoffs. He's 0-11 against teams that went on to win at least 12 games.
Wow.
Think about that. He's the only quarterback with a current contract of $100 million in total value that has never recorded a season with either 3,500 yards passing or 25-plus touchdowns.
Startling. And again, he got paid for one good season. Season one total for the New York Giants this year, 6.5.
Average season. Can we scratch good and put it in average, please? Thank
you. Sure. But gets blown up. He gets paid. Daboll's coach of the year. And look at how we're looking at it now. Another young quarterback. Well, Bo Nix is a minus 400 favorite to be the game one QB1 for the Denver Broncos, who drafted him number 12 overall. His head coach, Sean Payton, said he does not have a set date to name a starter. Quote, I would say I have an end date. That would be the week before the first game, but I don't have a set date. What's most important is to make the right decision. He later reiterated that while he doesn't have a deadline, he does have a gut feeling. With Jarrett Stidham and Zach Wilson also in the QB room, are Peyton's comments news or noise?
Oh, this is news that Bo Nix is going to start. The betting market knows it. They've adjusted it accordingly. Unless there's an injury, it's Bo Nix's job. I mean, this is on with the Bo Nix program. I think there's no question that that's what Sean wants to do. And I think Sean has it completely in his mind to do that. And I think he'll be very comfortable doing that.
The question has just been risen because the trios rotated getting first team reps during the offseason program. But as I said, Knicks minus 400, Zach Wilson plus 450, Jarrett Stidham plus 650 to be the quarterback for that early season game. According to Patriots quarterback Jacoby Brissett, number 3 overall pick Drake May is progressing, quote, tremendously. He said every day he's getting better. He's making some nice throws out there, and you're seeing his progression come alive. Gerard Mayo also said he's been most impressed by May's ability to bounce back. News or noise in New England, Drake May progressing tremendously.
It's all noise. What does that mean? Progressing tremendous. What does it mean? Somebody tell me what that means. I have no idea. I'm progressing tremendously and be going to a fat farm. I mean, like, what does that mean? That you're eating it a lot? I mean, come on. I mean, progressing. Where are we progressing to? And Mayo's already declared he doesn't want him to be the starter. All they're trying to do is pump it up. I mean, speaking of pumping it up, do you know tonight they're going to have the Brady thing? It's going to be you talk about a Robert Kraft enterprise tonight there at the stadium. Oh, I can't. Oh. This is going to be get me in the Hall of Fame time.
I love it. Starting quarterback odds on DraftKings for the Patriots. Interesting that Brissett is not as high as Bo Nix is for Denver. Brissett minus 260, Drake May plus 200 in that market. Let's hit one more here. Raheem Morris says he wants to get the ball to Bijan Robinson as much as he can. Said in the simplest form as you can possibly make it, get the ball to Bijan as much as you can in as many ideal situations as you possibly can for him. He's so talented. You don't want to limit the things he can do. Also talked about the quote from Bijan comparing what he wants to do in terms of a Christian McCaffrey role and said if we can get anything close to that, we'll be doing just fine. What do you think? News or noise about Bijan?
I think it's noise. I mean, they have to get the ball to him. I mean, why is that shocking? I mean, really?
Because they did it last year, and fantasy managers like myself were crying so many tears last year. So I liked this. I thought this was news. I said, feed him so I can draft him.
If you think it's news, I'll give it news. But I fully expected them to go down this road. I mean, I don't see this as – I mean, now, Algier's going to probably have to something to say about this. But, you know, look, I think he's got to make a really significant contribution in the passing game, which I think he definitely can. He's too good of a player not to.
It just bothered me so much last year when you had Arthur Smith saying, yeah, but what he does opens it up for so many other. But why don't you just give him the ball? Like, why are we giving the ball to Tyler Algier in short red zone situations instead of the guy that you know?
Because you didn't need to draft him. You could have drafted Jalen Carter and we wouldn't be having this conversation.
NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We here at the Lombardi Line are always here to help, and we want to help you bet smarter this year with a VSiN Pro subscription. Right now, you can upgrade to a VSiN Pro annual subscription for $199, and that's down from our usual $240 price, plus we're throwing in an extra month absolutely free. With VSiN Pro, you'll get exclusive access to premium analysis, expert picks, and advanced betting tools that'll give you an upper hand all year long. And here's the big news. Our NFL betting guide is coming out later this month. This guide is your ultimate one-stop shop resource for all things football season, packed with detailed team, division, and conference analysis, and of course, best bets for the upcoming season. Don't miss out. Limited time deal, VSiN.com/subscribe. Use our promo code Lombardi. That'll help you claim the discount and the bonus month. Again, that's VSiN.com/subscribe. Promo code Lombardi. Speaking of Lombardi, it's time for Lombardi's List here on the Lombardi Line. That's just a fun word to say. I'm just going to keep going with it. But I said it before the break, last week when we got on here, we did our weekly poll, which we're going to do throughout the course of the summer, asking fans to tune in and place their votes on the most valuable, most impactful non-quarterbacks in the NFL. And this week we decided to task you with a similar challenge, but we wanted to take it a step further and have you rank them 1 through 5. So let's start at number 5 here, Michael, and work our way up from there. Your number 5 most valuable non-QB.
Well, you know, one thing when you watch, and this is going to be a very heavy list in terms of defensive players, because is for as much as everybody wants to talk about the receivers, there's only one or two guys that tilt the field. But a defensive rusher's tilt the field. My number five in 5A, 5B is Parsons is number five. 40 and a half career sacks, 82 quarterback, 89 quarterback hits. He's very good. Next year with Mike Zimmer, will they move him around? They'll make him a little bit more of an effective player, because once he lines up and there's an uncertainty about who's blocking him, that's when he excels. I love Max Crosby, but what I love most about Max Crosby is his unbelievable relentlessness. His conditioning is remarkable. I mean, here's a guy who's got 52 career sacks. He's got 124 career hits on the quarterback. You know, last year he had 14 and a half sacks. I mean, you go into a game now with he and Christian Wilkins lined up together, pick your poison. Makes that really, really tough. So I just think those guys, those are what I call game plan guys. Everybody on this list on Tuesday, you're worried about how in the hell are we going to block them or how are we going to cover them? That's the key, is especially if they don't play quarterback. Number four, this is near and dear to your heart, even though he wasn't the same player last year as he was 2 years ago, but Nick Bosa still changes the game. He makes it very difficult. You know, he had 10 and a half sacks last season. He's got 53 and a half career sacks in a very short time. He missed one season with the knee injury, and he's got 141 quarterback pressures. Really amazing. And he go into the game, and last year, if Hargrave's healthy like he wasn't at the end of the year last year, he's playing through some injuries, it's going to make Nick Bosa an even better player. So, you know, to me, the one receiver, and this guy changes the game completely, and I know Justin Jefferson became the highest paid, but there is no one in the NFL like Tyreek Hill. Remember one year he was like the ninth best receiver in football? I almost lost my lost my stuff. I mean, it was like, how is this possible? Who's watching? This guy changes the game. He makes it easier for Waddle. He makes it easier for Tua. You have to be really careful about the run game with him, because the run game is not that he blocks anybody, because he doesn't. It's just that he draws the coverage. And when he starts to motion around, it messes with your run force, and it messes with who's going to take it. And one miss, off to the races. I think he is truly, I mean, I put him third. I think, and you know how I am with receivers, but this guy is a completely different, scary, scary player. He runs, I was talking to somebody this morning, he runs routes that are hard to cover because they're not really receiver type routes. They're like running back routes. And then once he gets the ball in his hands, what makes him so hard is he's quick, and then he's explosively fast in an instant. Like, there's no downtime.
And Michael, before you go to the top two real quickly, just to follow up on the Tyreek Hill side of it, I think the biggest compliment that you have paid him was last year throughout the season, because of the impact that he has on Tua and not the other way around. And again, the type of tilt the field player he is that other opposing defensive coordinators are game planning for, are scared of. You said like you couldn't believe that he wasn't getting more consideration in the odds market for MVP, because while that is a quarterback award, we know it. If there was anybody that was a non-quarterback last year during that time before he got injured, that he was just on a tear, like he deserved that respect and that credit because of what he brings to the team. But go ahead, go to the top two.
No. I mean, he's a joy to watch. He's hard to tackle. He's got this incredible quickness. Yeah, I mean, for him to get snubbed, I think Justin Jefferson's great. I think Chase is great. None of them are as good as Hill.
Yeah.
Let me say that to you. Nobody changes the game like Hill does. No one makes defensive coordinators hold on to their ass like Hill does. No one. My number two guy, and let me just say this, all six players, if they continue along this path that they're on, are all going in the Hall of Fame. Myles Garrett, 88 and a half sacks in his short career so far, 172 quarterback pressures, had 14 and a half sacks last year, 39 quarterback pressures. Everybody's trying to take him out of the game. Schwartz did a really good job of moving him around, but he changes the game. Not many guys can block him. You get a bad offensive tackle, you're going to see Myles Garrett against him, and you're going to have to chip him. You're going to have to put two guys on him. See, the one thing about the receiver position, and people say, well, you don't have enough receivers on this list. You know, if you talk to any good offense, that you could take a receiver out of a game. You know, you could do it. I mean, you could double him. Now, you can't take Hill out of a game because he'll run through double teams if you don't jam at the line. But you can force the ball somewhere else by coverage. But some of these defensive players, you can't take out of the game. Like Aaron Donald would be on this list. He's not playing anymore. You can't take him out of the game, especially if you move him around. So Garrett, and then of course T.J. Watt. I mean, T.J. Watt is just relentless. He's like Max Crosby, constant, constant, constant. You know, and even in a 34, when he's on his feet, he's still effective. When he puts his hand in the dirt, watch out. So, you know, 19 sacks last year, 36 quarterback hits. I mean, these guys are in line to become Hall of Famers.
Finished second in the Defensive Player of the Year voting last year. It was Myles Garrett who won it. But I think this leads to an interesting conversation now for Defensive Player of the Year as well, considering of your we'll call it the top six because 5A and 5B, to your point, are there. But five of your top six non-quarterbacks in the NFL are guys that are getting after the quarterback on the defensive side of the ball. Watt and Parsons are both plus 550 favorites to win Defensive Player of the Year this season, followed by Bosa and Crosby at 7-1, Myles Garrett plus 750 to repeat. So that bunch, all very tightly in terms of odds, like all very close up there, up top. And then you got Aiden Hutchinson there at 10-1. Pass rushers typically dictate the voting in this market so much more than any other position. The first corner that we see crack the odds on the board right here, Sauce Gardner at 60-1, shows again the impact that you're saying as far as a non-quarterback goes that these edge rushers and pass rushers ultimately have. I know it's so early to be voting, to be making a pick on this type of a thing, but based on the system with which they play, the schedule, other things that stand out to you, do you have any early thoughts on these numbers?
I think the other thing you have to combine with this is winning, right? Like, I think Max Crosby at 7-1 would be a great play, but do you think the Raiders, they're not going to give it to somebody who wins 5-6 games, right? So you're going to have to get, it's got to be like Aiden Hutchinson at 10-1 might be a good play. Mm. Now he's got Marcus Davenport on the other side. They've helped their inside defensive tackle. They think they can play man-to-man now, which they didn't think they could play last year. They drafted a corner in the first round, a corner in the third round. They traded for Carlton Davis. You know, they still have guys from last year coming back on the team. So I think they feel like Mosley has never really been healthy for him, but maybe he will be this year. So I think they can get after it a little bit more. So he would be an interesting one at 10-1. You know, I just don't think there's anybody. I mean, Chris Jones could easily be the Defensive Player of the Year if he would play all the time. Because he could change the game. I mean, look, let's be honest. I mean, there was a couple plays in that Super Bowl where he was out of the game on the 49er drive, and then he went back in. Now, he got lucky because the 49ers blew the blocking assignment. He didn't make the play. They blew the blocking assignment.
30-1, the odds there for Chris Jones. And with Nick Bosa, as you referenced, he took a step back last year, 10.5 sacks. It was his lowest output since 2020 when he missed all but two games with an ACL. It was a very uncharacteristic season for him. I think a big part of that was the approach that they had from the defensive coordinator spot. And also, this is a guy who didn't sign his contract until 4 days before the season started. And, you know, we heard from Deebo Samuel a couple years ago with the same organization saying that the contract situation leading into that year for him ended up impacting the way that he played that year. I wonder if that could have played a role last season as well for Nick Bosa. Yeah. And maybe this season just hitting the ground running will have a different elevated approach back to what we know from him.
Yeah, and I think that's the whole 49ers goal right now, is to play defense more aggressively than they did last year. And last year they had, you know, so many guys. You thought Chase Young was going to make an impact, Randy Gregory and Hargrave, mm-hmm. along with Armstead inside. They couldn't quite get it to the level they had it 2 years ago.
No doubt about it. Oh, that's your line. I'm not supposed to take your line. No doubt, baby.
DraftKings.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're this close to crowning an NBA champ, and with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VSIN, that's code VSIN, V-S-I-N, for new customers to get $150 in bonus bets. And you bet just $5 only on DraftKings, the crown is yours. Welcome back to the Lombardi Line. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you right as we were headed to the commercial break, our Twitter was lighting up. We had breaking news from ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski that Connecticut's Dan Hurley has officially turned down the offer from the Los Angeles Lakers to leave UConn and go to LA. It was a 6-year, $70 million offer, but he is instead elected to chase down a third straight college basketball title with the Huskies. Now, initially, when we booked Michael Calabrese on the program today, who joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line, it was to talk all things college football. And we will get to that in a moment. But you cover all college sports. And I know the last time we actually had you on the show was we were talking college basketball and we talked about this UConn team. So what do you make of the news coming through?
This is a huge win for college sports because the narrative in college football and college basketball since the transfer portal opened in earnest about 3 years ago, everyone said these coaches are sick of it. They have to re-recruit their own players. They have to deal with roster turnover. But I think what's clear here is that Hurley would prefer to stay in college where he has an opportunity to pick his own groceries before he puts it all together into a meal. Whereas the NBA, you're at the mercy of superstars. And at this point, the Lakers roster is not constructed in such a way that he could roll in year one and compete for an NBA championship. And I think he was smart enough to realize that all of the hostility and negativity around college coaches not being able to cut it at the NBA level. If you have a poor first season, all of a sudden that honeymoon is over and maybe you're overpaid and, you know, an LA media starts to eat you up a little bit. Whereas in college, he continues to dominate. This is two straight national titles, winning, going away, really being unchallenged. And he has an opportunity to surpass some of the greats in the history of the sport if he keeps winning. So I think probably in his mind, the NBA will be there if he wants to reconsider in 2 to 3 years. But why not go for the three-peat and something special in stores?
Yeah, and don't you think, Michael, that, you know, we hear the brand Laker, and it's really a powerful brand. But when you peel back, they don't really have the financial wherewithal. They're kind of trapped by where they are. There's kind of a little disconnect within their organizational. Who really runs the team? Jeannie Buss, Rob, I mean, all Pelinka. It's all kind of all over the place. And so to me, I know it's a lot of money, but he's going to make a lot of money no matter where he is. And he can stay 20 years. You know, 20 years in one place as opposed to six somewhere else where the expectations go way up, probably a smarter move.
I think it's absolutely a smarter move. The West is loaded, and not just in this upcoming season in 24-25, but moving forward. There's so many young teams loaded with young talent. So I agree with you. The Lakers, it's a roster issue. It's a front office and who's really running the show kind of issue. And then, as I mentioned, there's an element of being a god at the college level and whatever he says goes, and he can kind of drive the narrative. Whereas going to a major market like LA, you're not even necessarily the biggest show in town. And very quickly, the scrutiny can get ratcheted up, or you can kind of take a back seat and all of a sudden you're not as interesting as the Dodgers or USC football. There's a long list of things to compete with in Los Angeles. So I think this is the right decision for him. I'm a little bit surprised, you know, when they made it clear that he was their number one choice and they were going to drop this bag on him. I thought it was a foregone conclusion, but I think this is a really good sign for college basketball and certainly for a UConn program that would have had a scramble. The transfer portal would have reopened. It would have been open season on their players. So much has changed in the course of 10 minutes for UConn and where they're headed.
And UConn among the co-favorites at 10-1 to secure the three-peat for a third straight college basketball national championship. Michael Calabrese joining us on the Progressive Guest Line, college sports betting analyst at Action Network. Catch the Big Bets on Campus podcast, as well as the book out now, Legendary Bowl, Deciding College Football's GOAT, Settling the Ultimate College Football Question, Who's Number One? Which, real quickly, I know we have some bets we have to get to, but what was the inspiration for this? A labor of love, I'm sure. Which, and also, I'm like the lone schlub on this conversation right now that hasn't written a book, so I feel very, very low on the totem pole here.
Well, this was a labor of love. It took me years to put the rosters together, to do all the research, to make sure I was picking the correct 68 teams, and then to simulate it in NCAA 14, which that game gave so much to the college football community. I thought it was only fitting that, it, you know, in its last year, it was able to get me over the hump and have this book be produced. But it's really just trying to settle an argument that fans have across the country, that certainly there's arguments between conference supremacy. Are you an SEC school, a Pac-12 school? Rest in peace. Now you have an opportunity to see what it would look like if these legendary teams actually played one another. So there's 68 games. That means there were 68 teams, I should say, 67 games. I did write-ups of every one. So you're going to get to go on a journey, much like March Madness, through the whole thing. And at the end, I hope that you get to learn a little bit more about these teams. So many brought special elements to the game of college football, and they were important culturally, not just the national champions, but 07 Hawaii with Colt Brennan, some of the service academies that are in this book. There are so many small towns, small teams, unsung heroes that get finally their day in the sun in this book. So that's what really inspired me to put it together.
You know, I think that's the awareness. That's one of the reasons I wrote Football Done Right. I think the awareness factor is so important because we tend to lose sight of the legendary bowl, the games and the players who made a difference. And we just think this generation is always better than the last one. So I can't wait to read it, Michael. I applaud you for doing it. Now, here's the one question I have. Mario Cristobal. You're going to play 66-1 with my man to win a national championship. Besides the diligence that it takes to write a book, it takes great courage to make that bet right there, even at 66-1 odds.
You know, it's interesting, having gone through the book and the process, sometimes these rosters and the teams carried coaches who weren't quite ready. I mean, Larry Coker won a national championship at Miami. No one is, you know, saying that he's Newt Rockne. But sometimes the players on the field matter more. And I'm hoping that Mario, after not one but two time management gaffes, one at Oregon and then last year, which was absolutely criminal, he should be serving time in time management prison for 1 year. The fact that he lost those games, not realizing how to close things out with a 4-minute offense, if he can figure that out and get out of his own way a little bit, it's clear that what he's done in terms of building the roster has been enough. And certainly in the transfer portal era, to go out and to get a top five transfer quarterback like Cam Ward, to get Damian Martinez at the second opening of the spring transfer portal, he's a game breaker at running back. The talent is there. But this play is as much predicated on their talent as it is on the potential path. Now that we have a 12-team playoff, they don't need to have a perfect season. They could even lose two games and still sneak in. And that's what's going to be interesting about this year compared to other seasons. I think this would have been accurately priced at 66-1 in the 14 playoff era. But now I think there's a much higher chance that the Canes get in that 8-12 range. And if they do, all you need is a seat at the table for a chance to win a championship. And at 66-1, I want to stack as many of those with longer odds that I can.
Week one at Florida, a huge game for both programs. With the ACC removing divisions this past year, they avoid Clemson on the schedule this year. They avoid NC State. They get Florida State at home. A lot of things on the schedule come up nice for Miami this year for sure. Mario Cristobal, man, I understand where Michael's coming from and what you said. They were off to such a good start last year. You have the game won. Take the knee, man. What are you doing? It felt like that just set up Murphy's Law for the rest of the season for them. It was very unfortunate. Okay, last couple of minutes here, Michael. Can you lay out a couple of your favorite season win totals for 2024 in college football?
Sure. The one that I have on the table right now that I think is mispriced by nearly two wins is SMU. And I think a big part of that is the public perception. They're going from outside of the Power Five to now in the ACC. Oh, it's going to be a big jump up for them. But I want to bring up something that's critical. There's only 30 teams in the entire country that are bringing back the five most important people to their program. And that's the head coach, quarterback, both coordinators, and strength and conditioning coach. SMU is one of those programs. And honestly, if Preston Stone doesn't get hurt last year, it's probably them in the Fiesta Bowl and not Liberty up against Oregon. Had they made that New Year's Six bowl game, I think the perception on where they're headed as a program would be different. I have them slotted to go 9-3 because they're facing one of the easiest Power Four overall schedules in the entire country, the fifth easiest in conference slate, according to Kelly Ford and his K Ford ratings. So the fact of the matter is there's your personnel and there's your path. They have a cakewalk in their non-conference schedule. They only are, you know, set to play one top 25 offense at this point, and it's Florida State. And DJU, I think the jury's still out on can he elevate an offense or is he more of a game manager? So SMU, there are no games on the schedule that they cannot win. So the fact of the matter is 7.5 wins, even with a juice minus 175 to the over. I think that's the best play in all Power Four football right now in terms of a win total.
We got to hit the break, but before you go, excited or not excited for the 12-team playoff? First year, we're going to get it.
You know, I have been pushing against this and now my hands are up. I'm going to start enjoying the things that I can't control. And one of them is home playoff games for those 5-8 seeds. You would have to be lying if you would say a whiteout at Penn State wouldn't be exciting, or getting a game in the snow in Eugene or Madison, Wisconsin. I am really excited for those on-campus games, because when you look at FCS football, which has been exciting for years and years with their expanded playoff, that's the special element of the crowd, the fans, and finally seeing a Southern team maybe have to go up north and win a game on the road.
Couldn't agree more. Michael, thank you so much for your time. Everybody, make sure you get Legendary Bowl today and check out Michael Calabrese on the Action Network. We'll be right back.